You're listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of the essays of Rudolf Steiner that were introductions to Goethe's scientific writings, entitled Nature's Open Secret. This is the last chapter, chapter 18, entitled Goethe's Worldview in his title Verses in Prose. Before I read this, I want to mention that there is a wonderful essay after this by the editor of this book, John Barnes, and on principle I'm only reading Steiner on this site. But I wish I could put that on there. I recommend it to all of you. Goethe's Worldview in his Verses in Prose. We are not satisfied with what nature freely offers to the observing mind. We feel that to produce the vast variety of her creations, nature uses driving forces that she initially conceals from the observer. Nature herself does not speak her final word. Our experience reveals what nature can create, but not how that creation takes place. The means for unveiling the driving forces of nature exist in the human mind itself. It is here that ideas arise that throw light on the way nature brings forth her creations. What the phenomena of the external world conceal manifests within the human being. What we think through as natural laws is not invented as an addition to nature. It is nature's own inner constitution. The mind is simply the theater in which nature allows the secrets of her creativity to manifest. What we observe is only one aspect of things. The other is what then wells up within our minds. The same things speak to us from outside and from within us. We realize the complete reality only when we join the language of the outer world with that of our inner being. True philosophers throughout time have desired nothing but to proclaim the essential nature of things, what those things themselves express when the mind is offered as their organ of communication. When we allow our inner being to speak about nature, we recognize that nature herself fails to fully achieve what her driving forces could accomplish. Inwardly, we see in more complete form what experience contains. We discover that nature has not attained her goals in her creations and feel a need to express her intentions in more perfect form. Thus, we create forms that express what nature willed, but could achieve only to a certain point. Such forms are works of art, human creations showing in more perfect form what nature manifests less perfectly. Philosophers and artists have a common goal. They attempt to portray the perfection that their spirit sees when they allow nature to impress itself upon them. But they have different means available for achieving this goal. When philosophers are confronted with a natural process, a thought or idea lights up within them, and this is what they express. In artists, on the other hand, a picture of the process arises that reveals it more completely than it could be observed in the external world. Philosophers and artists develop their observations differently. Artists do not need to know the driving forces of nature as they reveal themselves to the philosopher. When they perceive a thing or event, an image immediately arises in their mind in which the laws of nature are more completely expressed than in the corresponding things or events of the outer world. Laws in the form of thoughts do not need to enter their mind. Nevertheless, knowledge and art are related inwardly. They show the potentials of nature that have not been fully realized in the external world. Now, if these driving forces come to expression in the mind of a true artist, not only as perfect pictures of things, but also as thoughts, then the creative source common to both philosophy and art appears with special clarity before our eyes. Goethe is such an artist. He reveals the same mysteries to us in his works of art and in his thoughts. What takes on form in his poetry, he states as thoughts in his essays on science and art and in his title Verses in Prose. These essays and verses offer such profound satisfaction because one sees in them the harmony of art and knowledge realized in a single individual. There is something uplifting in the feeling that arises in connection with each of Goethe's thoughts. Someone is speaking here who can see as images what he expresses in ideas. This feeling strengthens the power of such a thought. All that originates from the highest striving of a single personality must be inwardly connected. Goethe's wisdom answers the question, what kind of philosophy corresponds with true art? I will now try to give a coherent sketch of this philosophy, born of the spirit of a true artist. The thought content that arises within us when we confront the external world is truth. We cannot seek any knowledge other than the insight that we ourselves produce. Those who look behind things for something else that is supposed to explain them have not realized that all questions about the essential nature of things can arise only from our human need to permeate our perceptions with thinking. Things speak to us, and our inner nature speaks as we observe them. Both sides of this dialogue arise from the same primal being, and we are called on to bring about their mutual understanding. This is what knowledge is all about. Those who understand inherent human needs seek this and nothing else. For those who lack such understanding, the things of the outer world remain alien. Such people do not hear the essential nature of things speaking out of their own inner being. Consequently, they presume that it is concealed behind the things. They believe in another external world behind the perceptible one. But things remain external only as long as we merely observe them. When we reflect on them, they are no longer outside us. We merge with their inner aspect. The contrast between objective external percept and subjective inner world of thought exists for us only as long as we fail to recognize that these worlds belong together. Our inner world is nature's inner being. These thoughts are not refuted by the fact that different people view things differently, nor are they refuted because people are organized differently, so that we cannot know if a color is seen exactly the same way by different people. The question is not whether we form precisely the same judgment about something, but whether the language of our inner being is the language that expresses the essential nature of things. Individual judgments vary according to individual organization and the perspective of observation, but all judgments arise from the same element and lead to the essential nature of things. This may be expressed in various nuances of thinking, but it nevertheless remains the nature of things. The human being is the vehicle through which nature unveils her secrets. The deepest essence of the world is manifested in the subjective personality. Quote, when healthy human nature works as a whole, when we feel ourselves within the world as in a beautiful, worthy, and precious whole, when harmonious satisfaction grants us pure and free delight, then the universe, if it were self-aware, would rejoice at having attained its goal, and it would marvel at the pinnacle of its own becoming and being. Close quote, footnote quoted from Goethe's essay Winckelmann, Rudolf Steiner, end of footnote. The goal of the universe and the true nature of existence cannot be found in the products of the external world, but in what lives within the human spirit and what arises from it. Thus, for Goethe, scientists make a mistake by attempting to penetrate the inner being of nature with instruments and objective experiments. Quote, insofar as we make use of our healthy senses, we ourselves are the best and the most exact scientific instruments possible. The greatest misfortune of modern physics is that its experiments have been set apart from the human being, as it were. Physics refuses to recognize nature in anything not detected by artificial instruments, and even uses them to limit and to prove what nature can accomplish. We, human beings, exist at such a high level so that what otherwise could not manifest itself does come to expression in us. What is a string in its various mechanical divisions compared to the ear of a musician? Indeed, we may ask, what are the elementary phenomena of nature herself compared to humankind, since we must first tame and transform them before we can assimilate them to a certain degree? From Verses in Prose, close quote. As human beings, we want to know the essential nature of things. We must allow them to speak through our own mind. All that we can say about their essential nature is taken from the spiritual experiences of our own inner being. Only out of ourselves can we form a conclusion about the world. We must think anthropomorphically. When we say something about the simplest phenomenon, when two bodies collide, for example, we anthropomorphize. Even to conclude that one body strikes another is anthropomorphic. If we want to go beyond mere observation of what happens, we must connect it to the experience of our own body when it sets another body in motion. All physical explanations are hidden anthropomorphisms. We humanize nature by explaining her. We project inner human experiences into her. But these subjective experiences are the essential inner nature of things. Thus one cannot argue that we do not recognize objective truth or the, quote, things in themselves, close quote, because we can form only subjective representations of them. Footnote, and this is a long footnote. Goethe's views contrast sharply with Kant's philosophy. Kant assumes that our inner world of mental images is governed by the laws of the human spirit, and that consequently everything brought into it from the outside can exist there only as a subjective reflection. According to this view, we do not perceive the things in themselves, but rather only the images that result from how those things affect us, and from how we connect those effects according to the laws of our intellect and reason. Kant and the Kantians have no inkling that the essential being of things speaks through our reason. Consequently, Kantian philosophy could never mean anything to Goethe. When he did acquire some of Kant's principles, he gave them a completely different meaning than they had in the teachings of their originator. A note that came to light only with the opening of the Goethe archives in Weimar makes it clear that Goethe was very much aware of this antithesis between his own view and that of Kant. To Goethe, Kant's fundamental error was that he, quote, regards the subjective cognitive capacity itself as an object, and that he distinguishes the meeting point of the subjective and the objective sharply indeed, but not without error, close quote. The subjective and the objective meet when we unite the expression of the outer world with what our inner being speaks, and these become the unified being of things. Then the antithesis between subjective and object disappears completely into this unified reality. I indicated this in Chapter 11, beginning on page 136 of this book. Now in the first issue of Kant Studies, Karl Vorländer attacks what I wrote there. According to him, my view of the antithesis between Goethe and Kant is strongly one-sided, quote, strongly one-sided at best, and contradicts Kant's own clear statements. I'm sorry, let me read that again. Quote, according to him, my view of the antithesis between Goethe and Kant is, quote, strongly one-sided at best, and contradicts Goethe's own clear statements, and this because of a complete misunderstanding on my part of Kant's transcendental methods, close quote. Vorländer has no idea of the worldview in which Goethe lived. There is no purpose in arguing with him because we speak different languages. The fact that he fails to understand anything I have to say is an indication of how clear his thinking is, For example, I commented on this statement of Goethe. Quote, as soon as we become aware of surrounding objects, we regard them in reference to ourselves, and justifiably so, because our whole destiny depends on whether we like or dislike them, whether we are attracted or repelled, whether they are beneficial or harmful. This entirely natural way of viewing things and assessing them seems to be as easy as it is necessary. We assume a far more difficult task when, in our active pursuit of knowledge, we seek to observe the objects of nature as they are in themselves and in their own mutual relationships. We then look for and investigate what exists, not what pleases. From The Experiment as Mediator Between Object and Subject, close quote. I commented, quote, this shows how Goethe's worldview is the exact opposite of Kant's. According to Kant, there is absolutely no view of things as they are in themselves, only of how they appear in relation to us. Goethe sees this view as an inferior approach to things, close quote, and Feuerländer responded, quote, these words of Goethe are merely intended to express, in an introductory way, the trivial difference between what is pleasant and what is true. The researcher should look for, quote, what is and not what pleases, close quote. It is advisable for those like Steiner, who dares to say that this second, indeed very inferior way of relating to things is Kant's way, to first become clear about the basic concepts of Kant's doctrine. The difference between subjective and objective sensations, for example, which is described in passages such as section 3 of the title Critique of Judgment. Close quote. Now, my statement makes it clear that I never said that this way of relating to things is Kant's way, but rather that in Goethe's view, Kant's understanding of the relationship between subject and object does not correspond to the relationship we have with things when we want to know their intrinsic nature. Goethe's view is that of the Kantian definition does not correspond... Goethe's view is that the Kantian definition does not correspond to human cognition, but to our relationship with things when we regard them in terms of pleasure or displeasure. Those who are capable of understanding a statement, as does Feuerländer, would be better off learning how to read a sentence correctly before offering advice to others regarding their philosophical education. Anyone can look for Goethe quotes and order them historically, but to interpret them in the spirit of Goethe's worldview is something Feuerländer certainly cannot do. End of that very long footnote. There can be no question of any truth other than subjective human truth. Truth is the projection of subjective experiences into the objective interrelationships of phenomena. These subjective experiences may even assume a completely individual character. Nevertheless, they express the inner nature of things. One can only put into things what one has experienced in oneself. Hence, in a certain sense, each person puts something different into things, depending on his or her individual experiences. My interpretation of certain events in nature is not quite comprehensible to someone who has not had the same inner experience. What is important is not that people all have the same thoughts about things, but that when we think about things, we all live in the element of truth. Therefore, we should not reflect on another's thoughts as such and accept or reject them, but we should view them as proclamations of that person's individuality. Quote, those who contradict and argue should occasionally reflect on the fact that not all languages can be understood by everyone, close quote from Verses in Prose. A philosophy can never provide a universal truth, but it does describe the inner experiences through which the philosopher interpreted outer phenomena. When something expresses its essential being through the agency of a human mind, complete reality manifests only through the confluence of outer objectivity and inner subjectivity. We come to cognize reality neither through one-sided observation nor through one-sided thinking. Reality does not exist as something ready-made in the objective world. It is brought about through the human spirit in its connection with things. Objective things are only an aspect of reality. Goethe answers those who extol only sensory experience, quote, "Experience is only half of experience. Everything factual is already theory," close quote from Verses in Prose. In other words, an ideal element manifests in the human mind when it observes something factual. This worldview, which recognizes the essential nature of things in ideas and conceives of knowledge as a living into the being of things, is not mysticism. But it does have one trait in common with mysticism. It views objective truth not as something that exists in the outer world, but as something that can actually be grasped within the human being. The opposite worldview shifts the ground of things behind the phenomena into a realm beyond human experience. Such a view can either surrender itself to blind faith in that ground, received as religious revelation, or it can intellectually hypothesize and theorize about the character of that reality in a realm beyond. Both mystics and adherents of Goethe's worldview reject belief in some other world, just as they reject the hypotheses of such a realm. They maintain what is truly spiritual, which is expressed in the human being. Goethe wrote to Jacobi, quote, "God has punished you with metaphysics and put an arrow in your flesh, but he has blessed me with physics. I hold more and more firmly to the atheists, Spinoza's, worship of God, and leave to you all that you consider religion, as you must. When you say one can only believe in God, then I say to you that I set a lot more, that I set a lot of store in seeing." Close quote. What Goethe wanted to see was the essential being of things as it expressed itself in his world of ideas. Mystics also want to know the essential nature of things through sinking into their own inner being, but it is exactly the world of ideas, clear and transparent in itself, that they reject as unsuited for attaining higher knowledge. Mystics do not believe in developing their capacity for ideas to view the primal ground of existence, but concentrate on other inner forces of their being. Generally, mystics think they grasp the being of things in unclear sensations and feelings, but feelings and sensations are limited to subjective human nature and say nothing about things, which express themselves only in ideas. As a worldview, mysticism is superficial, despite the fact that mystics take pride in their, in quotes, depth as compared to people of reason. They know nothing of the nature of feelings, otherwise they would not see them as expressions of the world's being. And they know nothing of the nature of ideas, otherwise they would not consider them shallow and rationalistic. They have no inkling of what people who actually have ideas experience in them. For many, however, ideas amount to no more than words. They are unable to get hold of their unlimited fullness. It is not surprising that they experience their own hollow words, devoid of ideas, as empty. Those who look for the essential content of the objective world within their own being can also find the essence of the moral world order only in human nature itself. Those who believe in a transcendent reality behind that of human experience must also look there for the source of ethics, for the ethical, in the higher sense of the word, can come only from the essential nature of things. This is why those who believe in a transcendent world presume ethical commandments to which they must submit. Such commandments come to them either as revelations, or they actually enter their consciousness, as is the case with Kant's categorical imperative. We hear nothing about how this enters our consciousness from the transcendent world of, quote, things in themselves, close quote. It is simply there, and we must submit to it. A philosopher of experience, who holds to pure sensory observation, sees ethics as merely the effect of human drives and instincts. By studying these, we are supposed to arrive at norms that determine ethical conduct. Goethe sees morality arising from the human world of ideas. Only ideas that are clear in themselves, through which we give ourselves our own direction, can guide moral conduct, not objective norms or mere impulses. We follow these not out of obligation, as we would have to follow objective norms of ethics, nor are we compelled, as we might be, by impulses and instincts. Rather, we serve them out of love. We love them as we love a child. We want to see them realized, and we intervene on their behalf because they are a part of our own being. The idea is the guideline for conduct, and love is the driving force in Goethean morality. For him, duty means, quote, to love what we have commanded ourselves to do, close quote from Verses in Prose. Action, in the sense of Goethean ethics, is free activity. We depend only on our own ideas and answer to no one but ourselves. In title Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, a Philosophy of Freedom, I disproved the flimsy argument that a moral world order in which we each obey only ourselves can lead only to chaos and discord in human activity. Those who make this argument overlook the fact that human beings are essentially alike, and that we will never produce moral ideas that are different in essence and lead to discord. Footnote. A story will show how little understanding is present in professional philosophers today, both for ethical views and for the ethic of inner freedom and individualism in general. In 1894, in an essay for Zukunft, issue 5, I spoke out for a strictly individualistic view of ethics. Ferdinand Tönnies in Kiel responded in a brochure, quote, subquote, called Ethical Culture and Its Retinue, Nietzsche Fools in the Future and in the Present, title, Berlin, 1893, he offered nothing but the main principles of Philistine morality in the form of philosophical formulas. He says of me, however, I could have found, quote, no worse Hermes on the path to Hades than Friedrich Nietzsche, close quote. Struck me as truly humorous that Tönnies, in order to condemn me, presented several of Goethe's verses in prose. He has no idea that if I did have a Hermes, it was not Nietzsche, but Goethe. I have already shown in Chapter 10, Section 5 of this book, the connections between the ethics of inner freedom and Goethe's ethics. I would not have mentioned this worthless brochure if it was not symptomatic of the misunderstanding of Goethe's worldview that predominates in professional philosophical circles. Rudolf Steiner, end of footnote. From Goethe's perspective, there could be no art if human beings did not have the capacity to create in ways that are in complete harmony with nature's works, creations that manifest nature's meaning more completely than nature herself. The products of art are the objects of nature at a higher level of perfection. Art is a continuation of nature. Quote, because human beings are at the pinnacle of nature, we in turn see ourselves as a completed nature, which must in itself likewise produce another pinnacle. Toward that end, we ascend by permeating ourselves thoroughly with perfections and virtues. I've got to read that again. I'm sorry, it's a quote. I missed this. Art is a continuation of nature. Quote, because human beings are at the pinnacle of nature, we in turn see ourselves as a completed nature, which must in itself, likewise, produce another pinnacle. Toward that end, we ascend by permeating ourselves thoroughly with perfections and virtues. We summon discernment, order, harmony, and meaning. And finally, we elevate ourselves to the production of a work of art. From Goethe Winckelmann essay. After seeing Grecian works of art in Italy, Goethe wrote, quote, these exalted works of art are at the same time the most sublime works of nature, brought forth by human beings according to true and natural laws, close quote from Italian Journey, September 6, 1787. As mere empirical and sensory reality, these works of art are beautiful likenesses. Those who are able to look more deeply see them as, quote, a manifestation of hidden laws of nature that would otherwise never reveal themselves, close quote from Verses in Prose. It is not the material the artist takes from nature that makes a work of art, but what the artist puts into it from within. The most elevated work of art causes us to forget that it is based on a content from nature and awakens our interest only through what the artist has made for it. The artist forms naturally, but does not form as nature herself does. These sentences seem to me to express Goethe's main thoughts on art as set forth in his verses in prose. That is the end of chapter 18, and it is the end, as far as I'm going to do, of the reading of Nature's Open Secret, Introductions to Goethe's Scientific Writings by Rudolf Steiner. You have been listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com, the end of chapter 18.